Hey, have you ever wondered about the threat and safeguard matrix that's on OWASP and how useful it is? I got a special episode coming up where we're going to talk to the creator of that right after this. Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. I'm your host, G. Mark Hardy, and today we're going to be talking with Ross Young, the author of The Threat and Safeguard Matrix from OWASP, who also does a lot of other amazing things. Ross, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, G. Mark. So good to be here.
So we've known each other for a number of years, and you have done a lot of work. I remember when I first met you, you were working as a CISO for a financial corporation. You've been a CISO for a investment group. You've got a background that includes CIA. Well, why don't you just tell everybody a little bit about you, because I think they'll just find your story fascinating.
Oh, thanks. You know, I started my career in the federal government. You know, I always knew I wanted to do offensive cybersecurity. So I did my internship at NSA. I spent 10 and a half years at the Central Intelligence Agency, 5 years on the offensive side, and then also did a lot of DevOps and really helped secure the applications that our folks were building. And then I did cloud security at Capital One for 2 years, got to be there during the large Capital One data breach. And spent 4 years as the CISO at Caterpillar Financial. And most currently, I've been the CISO in residence at Team8, which is one of the largest Israeli venture capital firms that focuses on cybersecurity.
And you did this all before you turned 65, so that's pretty good. So you got an extensive background in things. And one of the things I love about you is you do a lot of writing. You actually got a book coming out as well, as I recall. You ready to talk about that yet, or is it still just in those... stealth
phase. I've actually already posted just a little bit about it on LinkedIn. So if you go to Ross Young on LinkedIn, you'll see that I'm writing a book called Cybersecurity's Dirty Secret, How Most Budgets Are Wasted. Because I found, you know, there's so much more we can do with our budgets. How do we make sure we maximize every dollar? How do we get, you know, better spending and looking through broken processes and fixing all of those things? So currently I'm talking to lots of CISOs to get some of their stories to include in the book. I've written over 100 pages and it should be coming out fairly soon. So I haven't made any date. So please don't say, is it coming out?
Fairly soon is a safe bet because no one is going to say, wait a minute, where is it? It's not here. But yeah, I've had a chance. Full disclosure, to do some pre-publication review, and I love what he's got to write on there. It's very valuable. When it does come out, it's going to be something that I think is going to make the list of essential books for chief information security officers and for those who want to become a CISO. But one of the things you developed a little while back is that I think has really been very influential has been the threat and safeguard matrix, or the TASM. And I love the logo that you came up with, little Tasmanian devil with a cape. But for those who want to follow along with us, if you're at your computer, it's the OWASP, O-W-A-S-P, Threat and Safeguard Matrix, TASM. You can just go to OWASP.org and look for TASM or just Google it and pull it up. And I'm going to do that right now. So I've got that on my screen in front of you. But Ross, tell me a little bit about what is the TASM, where'd it come from, and really how do people use it? And then maybe we'll walk through a couple scenarios of how it could be incredibly useful.
Yeah, of course. So I spent a lot of time researching other folks' models and frameworks and figuring out what would help me, especially as I was stepping into my first true CISO role as the CISO at Caterpillar Financial. And one of the models that really stuck out to me is the Cyber Defense Matrix by Sunil Yu. And what he does on the left-hand side and the rows, he puts, you know, application, data, network, you know, the traditional tech layers that we see. And on the NIST5 functions on the vertical slices above, identify, protect, detect, respond, recover. And so the idea being that, you know, how does he go to a place like RSA or Black Hat and be able to quickly say, oh, you're a DLP vendor, so I'm going to put you in the data column and I'm going to put you under the protect, matrix quadrant here. And it's really helpful for figuring out where things play at. And I studied that model and I thought, you know, that's really helpful. It helps me understand a lot of things. But when I talk to my organizational leaders, the chief financial officer, the chief audit officer, data privacy, you know, they're not technical. I can't really have, you know, application layer discussions with them. So I decided to transform that. And instead of putting the tech layers on the side, I said, why don't we put material threats to our company? And so now you can say, how would we identify, protect, detect, and respond to a phishing attack? Or how would I identify, protect, detect, respond, and recover to a web application attack? And now suddenly when you think about this, it allows us to quickly build a defense in depth matrix of how we're going to safeguard our company against these material threats. And I think that is the core of what we have to be able to do as a CISO.
That's fascinating. So really what we did, and of course, Sunil, you has been on our show more than once. And so for those who are not familiar with his work, go back and take a look. So remember Sunil Yu, in terms of his model, we had five columns, and it included the identify and protect that was left of boom, and then detect, respond, recover, right of boom. But here in this particular case, instead of looking at people and technology and things, you're looking at specific threats. Now, the thing I like about the TASM model is it's highly customizable based upon your own perception of what your threats might be. And so for those of us who are CISOs and security leaders, we should be paying attention to threat intelligence, knowing what it is that we're most worried about. For example, you could be worried about something like a scenario of bring your own device issues or CEO impersonation, or there's a number of them that you offer up on your website. But if we were to go ahead and then be very specific about that, we could say, okay, what are the elements that would allow us to identify this particular threat? And then in advance, how do we protect against it? And should it materialize, what are the things that we can do to detect, respond, and recover? Now, unlike Sunil's matrix where you're dropping product descriptions or vendor names in here, what are you putting in each of these little boxes instead?
Yeah, so we're using the term safeguards. And a safeguard could be a tool, it could be a process, or it could be a human, perhaps doing human oversight. And so just think of the example here of maybe your developers are releasing a new AI model, right? You could have a tool that scans that AI model and says, oh, doesn't comply with whatever. You could have a human, maybe a second person who reviews the lines of code before it gets merged in a GitHub. Or maybe you have a process, right, where, you know, different things have to happen in an organization. So maybe you have to, you know, verify that things get changed once a year or something like that. So these are the different ways that they can be applied out as safeguards. And just to maybe call out on the threats, one of the things I would highly recommend is looking at the most common threats for the last year. So think about, maybe you start with the Verizon data breach report and you say, I'm worried about credentials being stolen. I'm worried about phishing happening. I'm worried about, you know, just unpatched vulnerabilities that are exploited. You would want to make sure you go through those because those are just so common and likely to happen. But then there's going to be things that are unique to your business. And I actually put a list of about 25 different common examples of threats. So, you know, maybe you're really worried about your company's CEO being deepfaked, and that's different for other companies than yours, but you're so, you know, focused. Your company is Tesla, and Elon Musk is all over the board where he can easily be recorded and deepfaked. So things like that, I think, is where it's helpful to look at this and then run that through the matrix.
Got it. And so what you had mentioned, though, is that you're looking at safeguards. So we're going to populate our matrix not with necessarily products or tools, but safeguards, which could include things such as user training, being able to go ahead and do non-technical measures and things like that. So what it sounds like is that we can use, as you'd said, common sources like, you know, what's bad this year? If we go ahead and look at Verizon data breach report, we could take a look at something, for example, Red Canary comes out with a monthly report that says these are the biggest things. SOC Coolish is now up at number one or number five or whatever, and this thing has changed and the like. And ClickFix is what I'm seeing is in my environments where attackers are convincing users who are perhaps not familiar with Windows machines, oh yeah, just go ahead and do a Windows R, a Control V, and an Enter, and that proves that you're a human instead of counting the number of motorcycles or something like that, which in fact is just copying the buffer into a command window, running it, which then will probably kick off a PowerShell script, which will download some malware, which is then going to go ahead and say, oops, your files are encrypted. But your average user who does not understand what's going on under the hood. So using that as an example, if we talk about our threat and safeguard matrix, and we're going to populate a row, and I just kind of pick this one because it's something that I've been dealing with lately in our scenarios. What would we, for example, put down there in the identified box when we're looking at click fix as being the potential threat?
Yeah, so I think you would want to say, well, where could this happen? How do we identify sources? You know, maybe it's on the endpoints where users can input, you know, new applications or new scripts to run. Maybe it's on the server side. Do we think it's on network or applications? You know, start to put that and then talk about, well, how would we inventory that? How would we know all the applications or all the laptops? Do we have something that says, okay, here is our system inventory or CMDB or something like that that we have? Now, once we've identified those, another thing that actually falls under this identify is how would we know where there's some vulnerabilities around these things, right? So let's just say we know that developers have the ability to write custom PowerShell scripts on our boxes. Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably a vulnerability if any bad actor can phish one of your developers and then instantly run PowerShell scripts on their Windows laptops. Right. So it's identify all of the assets plus identify how vulnerable they are. And then when you go into the protect phase in that box, you would start to say, well, what could I do that would actually prevent scripts from happening? You know, and you just think of maybe there's something like an allow listing software, like a threat locker that would say you can't run these scripts. Only this, let's call it, Windows program has the ability, and that goes through a process where you're actually going to say, this has been reviewed, this script has been authorized, and now it can be run. And if it doesn't have that hash of that script, it's not going to run. So that allow listing software is a great protect example of what you could put in this example here.
And we're still all left to boom here. Exactly. So these are things that we can put into place today before we ever encounter the actual threat in our environment.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then if we keep continue and we go, let's say we go right of boom, and then we go on detect. So how do we detect that? What would be things we would put in, such, for example, I'm wanting to see, is a user trying to run a PowerShell script? Because your average user doesn't run PowerShell scripts. Perhaps is somebody going to an unusual website like a .xyz? Are they trying to download an executable file, things like that, that we could pick up with all of our tool sets? So are those the things that I would put into the detect box as well?
Yeah. So things that would identify an attack has happened, mm-hmm. right? An example is maybe someone is using CrowdStrike or Windows Defender and it gets some thread detection and it says, hey, this script ran and you now have that telemetry in your SIM. Right. So those EDRs, those SIMs would have some of that data, perhaps some of the Windows logging features or different application server logs could also contain that information of here's what was run in the bash shell history type commands. Right. So any of those things would be good examples of detect. And then once you have those detects, then you could, you know, start to move into the respond and recover phases.
Right. As I'm thinking on the protect, I'm actually, you know, going through and building out this matrix, is that another thing on the protect is to be able to say, hey, can I block people trying to go to odd top-level domains? For example, I have not yet seen one of these click fixes that goes to a .com, a normal domain, so to speak. It's going to go to some unusual extension that probably is not well regulated. There's often some weird stuff out there. So using a tool like an umbrella or the like, or Zscaler or something, you can say, hey, you just can't get there from here, number one. So that's protecting you. And the other thought is that from that perspective is maybe you block brand new domains, because a lot of these things, they'll spin up a domain to do this attack. They don't have any intention of paying for it. So after 72 hours, the registrar says, hey, you didn't pay, we're shutting down your domain. But hey, they've already run the ransomware campaign. It's all about cost management. So protect, detect. Now, in the respond phase, we would say, okay, if this thing actually materialized and something hit the fan, we would put the response in there. And then for people who are trying to understand the difference between respond and recover, looking at the the cybersecurity matrix and things like that, how would you help people get them in the right boxes between respond and recover?
Yeah, so responses tend to be temporary, right? We're spinning up the incident response team to do certain actions. So maybe when we don't know how bad these PowerShell scripts are, we just turn them off for the entire company because we don't want this to continue just spreading and causing more harm. But ultimately, we're going to have some PowerShell scripts we want to, let's say, turn back on because it's probably part of the new laptop deployment scripts by the help desk team, right? So in the response phase, maybe we turn it off. We actually say, oh my goodness, let's review the roles. How many people have access to this? Is it hundreds of developers or is it only the three admins who are on this help desk team? And we kind of right-size those things. And then once we get that to a place to where we feel it's safe, recover is all about resuming operations, right? So here, we're going to turn back those PowerShell scripts back on. Maybe one by one, we have to review which ones we're going to turn on and others we're just going to leave off, or we've changed the roles around it. Another example where recover is really different also tends to be on the DevOps side of the house. So let's just say something had encrypted and stolen the data. We'd probably just blow that server away and then just deploy a brand new server versus trying to risk, let's say, resuming an old server that we know previously had malware that maybe we removed it, but we didn't get all of it. And then it still has malware on it. So in that example, recover is, hey, we're going to roll out a new server, make sure it's all patched, make sure there's no way the root cause of how the bad actors got in is still accessible. And now you have something that's fully deployed.
Now with the structure, and by being able to look at something like a TASM, that's also something that I can share with others. That is to say, I can go ahead and go to, let's say, if I'm trying to get some budget for something, to say, here is a threat that we have identified. It may or may not have landed on us yet, but we can all agree that we are concerned about it because it's being targeted against us. And then looking at these different steps, I could pick a couple of things that I can say, well, these are measurable results. And the things that you go ahead and you can measure them, you can get them done. And as you point out, what gets done, what needs to get done, is going to get funded. So after we've populated this TASM, it's more than just being aware of the actions to take, but your structure could then be used to help drive a push toward obtaining the tool sets or the capabilities that we need to, in fact, improve our security, correct?
That's right. So if you start reading on the page, you'll actually see I introduce a cyber report card. And I just give an example of what it could look like. And so, you know, when I was in my role, I was starting to say, well, what are the things I'm most worried about? Well, I'm worried about, you know, internet-facing vulns being exploited by bad actors. Okay, I should probably have a metric in there that says, how fast are we going to patch internet-facing servers or internal servers? You know, you probably have an SLA in your organization. And how do you show that? And so month to month, you show a status. Where am I right now? And then just because I'm at 15 or 30 days, is that a good number? Well, I don't know on itself. What I actually need to do is I need to do a trend analysis and show where I was the month before. Because if I was at, let's say, 10 days patching, and now I'm at 50 days patching, that's a kind of a bad trend for an organization. And someone's going to go and say, WTF, we need to actually go figure this out. Why are we so much worse? But if I was, you know, at 50 days and now I'm at patching at 10 days, hey, let's go celebrate, take everybody out to lunch because that's a really good improvement. So that trend analysis is really good. And then the other thing I think you also need is some type of goal or a key SLA that you're targeting. You know, maybe I have a policy that says we shall always patch within 30 days. That's the generally accepted SLA this organization has. So when I'm measuring these things, I can kind of look and say, oh, I'm right around that number or I'm below it. And when I'm not, you know, are these things that I bring up to my executive risk committees? Do I bring it up to the CIO in monthly meetings just to show that we are exceeding our organizational risk tolerance, if you will?
Wow. So there's real utility there. And another thing that I found that as I'm looking at the way you've described this is you could also use a TASM for enhancing threat modeling. And I'm thinking like, okay, fine, if we're looking at application threat models and discussions and things like that, this sounds like an interesting idea. How would we use this TASM structure that you developed to enhance threat modeling?
Yeah, so one of the things I find about threat models, it feels like everybody has their own different way of doing a threat model. And so if I did, 100 threat models in one organization, I have 100 different standards, then it's really hard for me to do a trend analysis that says, hey, out of the 100 threat models we did, 80 of them suffered the same problem that maybe should be an enterprise activity to fix.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I like to do is look at two things. One, create a simple data flow diagram of whatever system it is that you're trying to protect. And then the second thing, let's just look through the most common threats that we typically see to applications. And you can just think of the STRIDE acronym: spoofing, tampering, repudiation, information disclosure, denial of service, and elevation of privilege, right? And you go in and say, well, how could this app be spoofed? How would we identify where in the app that would happen? And then how would we protect that from happening, right? And you go in and you work through that. And now when you do that, you have a consistent way where you can go and actually talk to all the different people and say, hey, this is what we're finding across all of our applications in a very consistent way. And we think this is going to be really helpful next year when we're planning our budget of what things we need to tackle on an enterprise level.
And you can look for commonalities that way too, because again, you benefit from having a structured approach, and you might be able to say that, hey, a lot of our applications have these same findings. If you go on the architectural review boards, you're like, yeah, we should really kind of focus on that because we seem to be repeating this mistake over and over again. You might miss that by looking at every single thing individually, but by being able to look at it in a comprehensive manner, we do better. So that's awesome. How about for risk committees? If you're trying to think about more than that, because we've been focusing pretty much just on cyber threats, but when you're dealing with risk committees, they're not just interested in cyber. They've got financial, legal, regulatory, compliance, HR, stuff like that. Can that work over here as well?
So this is probably my favorite part of the model is it's one of the only models that's just bigger than cyber. Right. So, you think of the CIA triad, you can't really take confidentiality, integrity, availability and apply that to anti-money laundering or, how we're going to handle COVID risks and things like that. But what you can do here is you can say, let's put all of the threats from the company that are material in nature and then start ranking them. So we can go ahead and say, well, finance is really worried about changing interest rates because all these crazy tariffs that are going on right now. Interesting. Okay. HR is really worried about all the North Korean employees coming into our company. Gotcha. Cyber, we're really worried about phishing. And now when I start to rank all of these things as to how big the risk is, it allows cyber not just to be the one begging for money every year, but now you have legal and HR and finance actually saying, you know what? Cyber is really the top number two and three risks in our company, and we think we should really be spending more money. And so you've kind of built this coalition of forces supporting how you're going to tackle material threats. And more importantly, you're actually teaching the NIST 5 functions, now 6, to your risk committee counterparts. People in HR have never thought about how do I detect, respond, and recover to certain things. That's a cyber mentality. So when we start bringing this knowledge, this tradecraft to them, I feel like we're helping them be more secure with the threats that are native to financial, to HR, to legal, and giving some of this acumen from cyber.
And we're earning that C in CISO as a chief officer by being able to bring new ways of thinking, better approaches toward solving business problems, not just technical problems. So yes, absolutely, it extends beyond that. And one last thought here. What about AI? Can this have any impact on our input of AI?
Absolutely. And I won't spoil it and go into all the details, but I put in top 7 AI risks that I saw across our organization and multiple companies after talking to hundreds of CISOs. So you'll see there's 7 AI risks that I think are very, very important to take a look at. And then you can actually start plotting them through the matrix. And here's the thing. The way you solve sensitive data leaks is very different than the way you solve hallucination problems. So making sure you understand how they play out in this matrix is really, really important, because you're probably going to have to buy very different tools, put in very different processes, and implement very different safeguards. So take a look on the website, and I think you'll find some really helpful things you could take back to your leadership team.
Well, great. Well, we're going to make this a shorter episode because I think we wanted to be hit hard and hit fast. But OWASP TASM, if you can't find the website, we're going to put a link in our show notes. But you can also Google OWASP space TASM. First link will come right up, I think, with any search engine. Our guest has been Ross Young, the author of the OWASP TASM, also a person who's contributed significantly to the cybersecurity community. And I expect you will see a lot more from this person, particularly because he's working on his book about how our budgets are wasted and things like that. If you like our show, please go ahead and follow us on LinkedIn if you're not doing it so already. We have a lot more than podcasts. We also have a Substack newsletter. We'll put out a steady stream of high-signal, low-noise information that you can get on our LinkedIn feed. If you're following us on a podcast channel and you haven't already given us a rating, give us a 5-star or a thumbs up. Why? Not because we're grade-grubbing, but it improves our ranking so that other people can find us as well to help improve their tradecraft as well in the CISO environment. We hope you've enjoyed the show and you find it very useful. Drop us a note. Touch us over on LinkedIn or something like that. We'd love to hear back from you here at CISO Tradecraft. So this is your host, Jim Arcardi. Until next time, stay safe out there.